originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Jude Feld.
Good evening, everyone, wherever you may be. Trainer Talk is on the air. Tonight's broadcast, sponsored by Fasig Tipton, is the show that trainers listen to. This is Jude Feld, and I'm very pleased to spend the next hour with you and our special guest. Tonight's trainer has won 376 races as of this taping, with 1,589 of his charges finishing in the money while earning over $10 million in purses. He is also fresh off a victory in the 100th Grade 1 Jockey Club Gold Cup at Belmont Park last Saturday. Welcome to Trainer Talk, Uriah St. Louis. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going great.
Yeah, I guess so. that was some win. We'll talk about that later in the show, but wow, I was so pleased for you.
Still pinching myself. It's been so good. I mean, I've been on the phone talking to people I don't even never heard of. But it's been great. You know, the horse is doing fine, and if everything goes right, we will be there at the Breeders' Cup.
Oh, that's fantastic. So I guess we'll start at the beginning. You were born in Trinidad, You lived there for 15 years, the first 15 years of your life. Who or what ignited your passion for thoroughbred racing?
My oldest sister, her name was Iva, and she introduced me to horses. I was about 5-6 years of age, and she took me to the racetrack. It was the day after Christmas Day. They call it Boxing Day in Trinidad. And we got out to the racetrack, Queens Park, Savannah, and I was a little kid, as I said, and I fell in love with a gray horse. I saw this gray horse on the racetrack, and I'm like, ooh, I like this horse, and from that day on, I was hooked.
Well, do you always give the gray horses an extra look when you go to the sales?
Not really, because I had one or two of them, and there wasn't, I mean, they either real good or real bad. And I had one or two that wasn't that good. And I decided I wasn't going to buy none. And then one year we went to the sale, and my wife told me, she said, you know, you and gray horses don't get along. And I bought three or four. And she was like, the first four horses you buy is all gray. And I said, well, got to work out. And one or two of them turned out to be decent. And after that, I just got over it and say, you know something, if I'm going to buy it, I'm going to buy it.
That's right.
Look for pedigree and, you know, confirmation, and we go from there.
Yeah. Yeah, the color's kind of immaterial, right?
Yeah. Right.
So you moved to the United States in 1973. You were 15 years old, and you moved to Brooklyn. Talk about the difference between Caribbean life and life in Brooklyn. That's like two different extremes.
Night and day. I came in on it was August 10th on the nighttime, and got off the plane, got to Brooklyn, and they were driving out to my sister's house, and I see, man, this place is lit up, and it's the middle of the night, and people, you know, like 10 o'clock in Trinidad, I'm sound asleep. 10 o'clock in the United States, everybody's awake in Brooklyn. You know? And I'm like, wow, this is a different lifestyle. But, you know, I went to school. I said I had a second chance in life to make it, and decided I was in high school. I went to high school in East New York on Vocational Technical High School. And while I was going to school, found out that it had a racetrack about a mile and a half, 2 miles away from that school. And every day, classes finished at 2:15, and then I was on the track team. So we would run up to Aqueduct, bet the late daily double, and run back to finish our track stuff. And I kept going to Aqueduct. Then when I finished high school, I went to a computer school for about 8 months. Then I got a job with a company named American Tote. And it was the best job I could have because I was fixing the computers that sells the ticket. And all I did was, while I fix the computers, I get a paycheck, I bet horses. And my wife said, "You throwing away a lot of money. Why you don't start figure out what's going on in this business instead of just spending your money?" And I looked around and I saw a trainer in Oklahoma named Robert Hayes. And I called him up and I said, "Is there any way you could teach me how to become a trainer?" He said, "It's a lot of time, and you got to have patience." And I said, "I got a lot of time, I got patience." And we sold everything in Brooklyn. And we moved to Oklahoma. And my wife always takes chances with me. And we moved to Oklahoma, and Robert will show me every day what to do. And I started from the bottom. And bought a horse named Kept Pack, one named Double Magic. And just kept going on. And we end up with Discreet Level at the end, yeah.
Well, hopefully it's not the end. Now, you mentioned your wife, Amanda. She takes chances with you. How important is it when you're in the horse business to have a spouse that understands the game and is willing to, you know, make that leap of faith?
Very important. I think most trainers who have a wife that's involved in the business with them wants their wife to, you know, to be on the same page. Because if you guys are not on the same page, it's a 7-day-a-week job. And a lot of people don't understand. 7 days mean you're out there 4 o'clock in the morning, and sometimes you don't finish, especially if you're hands-on, sometimes you don't finish until 6-7 o'clock at night, and then you're back out 4 o'clock in the morning, 7 days a week, Christmas, Easter, New Year's, your kid's birthday, your birthday, name it. You have to be there, because if you're not there, and if you get big like Todd Pletcher and them, and I cannot speak for them, you know, if you get big like them, you might not have as much to do as the little guy with his 8 or 10 horses. But if you got 8 or 10 horses and you're doing this business, it's every single day. The horses cannot feed themselves. They cannot clean up after themselves. They can't do nothing for themselves. So you have to be there. You got to come in the morning, take their temperature. You got to make sure everything is right. Like this morning, we had 20 to go to the racetrack. Instead of 20 go to the racetrack, we only sent 10 because the track was really sloppy. And the young ones in them, you don't mind, but the older ones in them, they're fit. So you said, you know, get them a day off. And your wife or your spouse, whoever it is, have to be very, very involved with you if they want you to make it succeed in this business.
Yeah, it's so important, and I always tell young trainers that, you know, to find somebody that understands the game, because it's very, very difficult when you're married to someone who doesn't get the 7-day-a-week thing and isn't involved in the day-to-day stuff. It's kind of tough. Now you are a hands-on guy. I read after you won the Jockey Club Gold Cup, you said you couldn't really celebrate too much because you had 23 horses back at Parks you had to take care of the next day. It's great that you have such a fantastic work ethic, but sometimes it's got to get to you that you really don't have much time for yourself.
When I started, and as I said, if you want to make money in this business, some things you have to do for yourself. You can't let the guy bring hay and straw and feed for you, because he charged you, if it's, say, a bag of homely 200 is $18, he will charge you $23, $22 for that bag of homely 200. If a bale of hay is $5, he will charge you $8 for that bale of hay. So, and if you had to go pick up, say, shaving or straw or whatever, a bale of straw might be $4, but that guy's going to charge you $7 for that bale of straw because he's bringing it and putting it in your rooms with them. Instead of that, I go out, we bought a trailer to pick up hay. We have a trailer to take our horses to any racetrack we want to go to, because if you don't get a trailer, you got to pay the guy and you got to leave on his time. If he decide he's going to, say, like, for example, we at Parks, if you're going to Delaware, if I'm in the fifth race of Delaware and his fifth race runs at 3 o'clock and you don't have to be at Delaware till, say, 10 o'clock, I can leave 8 o'clock and get to there. If you're going with another truck, you're going to have to leave 6 o'clock in the morning. So that really takes some of your time away. So that's why I'm hands-on, because we a lot of the stuff, we drive our horses every place. The street level, we drive him mostly every place. When he went up to Saratoga, all those times, we took him. When we went to Belmont, every time we go to Belmont, we take him. If you go to Delaware, you know, any place, we take him. So that instead of paying that guy that $2,000 or $3,000 to take you to Saratoga, it cost me $150 in gas. I still have to drive up there and stay in a hotel. No matter what I do, I still have to drive up. So instead of paying that guy that kind of money, I would do it myself and save that money. And this way, in turn, I can make a profit.
I bet you could also make a profit teaching trainers how to take care of their business a little bit, because you train for yourself and every dollar counts. Such great experience in the way to do things in a cost-effective manner. It's so expensive to train horses these days. It runs roughly $48,000 a year to take care of one horse. But I'm sure your costs are less than that.
Way less, because, one, my son is my assistant, and I have to pay him what I pay other people. I mean, I shouldn't say that, because no, somebody going to say, listen, come work for me. but he's there 100% of the time with me, helping me do everything. My daughter, when she is not working, she comes and she helps. She will rake up the shed row. She will help do something, clean something. My wife, every Saturday and Sunday, she comes to the barn and she will do something, you know, rake, clean, help put the hay away, help put the straw away, help put the shaving away. You know, so that saves money, because every time somebody do something for you on the racetrack, they want to get paid. And they deservedly say they should get paid. But a lot of the stuff, if you could do it yourself, you could save money. And, you know, like, I do, you know, a lot of the stuff ourselves. You know, we go, if we have to go buy mats at the stalls, we go buy it. We pick it up, we bring it. We used to have to buy gates, but now Parks, they supply you with the gates, you know. And it's just a lot of stuff. Instead of paying somebody to go do the laundry, we take the laundry and take it and wash it ourselves, you know.
Right.
So you could save money if you want to do the right thing. I mean, you could be lazy and say, okay, you do it, you do this, you do that. You know?
Yeah. But then that's all out of pocket. You've got to pay everybody to do that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, your family obviously is a big part of what you do. And I thought it was interesting that even though you love this game and you work very hard at it, that when your kids were in school, you kind of backed off a little bit so you could spend more time, you know, helping them, going to their sporting events and that kind of thing. Talk about that a little bit, like stepping away or scaling down to spend more time with your family.
Well, at that time, about, let's say, 8, 9 years ago, I had to make a decision. Should I keep pushing this business, or make sure my kids finish high school. And on the racetrack, you know, my wife always tells people when they were growing up, she wants owners and trainers, not grooms or not workers. So she, to do that, you got to make sure they go to school. And my wife is a registered nurse. So she making decent money. And I had to make a decision. Should I stay home and be like mom and pop? Decision I had to make. When they go to high school, there was in high school, my son was playing basketball, so I had to go to all his basketball games. My daughter is playing basketball, I had to go to her basketball games. So sometimes my daughter is playing at 3 o'clock in the evening at one school, and my son is playing 7 o'clock in the night at another school, so I'm running back and forward. Then I had to come home and make sure they do their homework. And when they finish their homework, I had to get back to the racetrack. So I said, look, I have to sacrifice something. So we sacrificed the racetrack until they finish. And when they were finished and the boat went to college, I said, no, I could spend some time. And Randy Passad, that trainer, he helped me a lot. When I went back into training full-time, I said, Randy, I don't have no set of horses, and I ain't been really doing it for a few years. Is there any way you could help me? And he's a trainer, as I said, he's from Guyana, and he used to ride for me. And he told me, he said, listen, I could send you maybe a half dozen horses, and this owner will pay you X amount of dollars. And I said, well, that's great. Well, he didn't send me a half dozen great horses. He sent me a half dozen duds, but I didn't mind. I needed horses, so I took those duds, and they went a little race here and there, but they were doing the right thing. And every time they win a race, I will go out to this. Every time Faison Tipton sale or any one of them sale come up, I'll go buy a couple 2-year-olds for myself. And after a while, I start phasing the horses out, but I kept getting more and more mines. And my son finished college, and I said, listen, we could go all out and do the right thing. But we had Discreet Lover already. He was, I think, 3. And I told him, I said, we're going to go try to win some big races with him. I said, this horse, he runs the numbers, so we could go try some big races. My son is all about numbers. He knows all the numbers. And he started telling me, he said, well, yeah, look, he's running 90s and 80s and 90s. He said, he might win grade one with that, but he can win a lot of stakes if he could get him to run. And we tried Ohio Derby. The first one we tried was the Parks Derby, which runs the same day as the Kentucky Derby. And we finished second in that race. Horse named Abiding Star won the race. And we finished second to that horse. Then we said, what the heck, let's go to Ohio. We tried the Ohio Derby, and we finished 3rd in the Ohio Derby. Then we should have come back to the Haskell, but we said, let's go a little further out. So we went to Indiana, and we ran in the Indiana Derby. And he got pushed around. He didn't run good. We came back, and we ran in the Smarty Joe's. He didn't run good. He got beat up. Everybody, man, you keep running that horse over his head. I said, no, he's not running over his head. He's just getting bad trips and stuff, you know. Then we ran him back in the Pennsylvania Derby against Gun Runner. And he lost a pair of shoe. As soon as the gate opened, I see the shoe went up in there. I didn't know it was my horse. I thought it was somebody. And it was my horse. He lost his shoe. He didn't run a good race. So we said, we got to go back to the drawing board. Let's go back to these little $100,000 stakes. And we went back to, I think, Laurel, and we finished 2nd or 3rd in one of them stakes. We gave him some time, and we said, let him grow up. As a 4-year-old, we'll start. 4-year-old, we start doing good, but we run into Gun Runner. And Gun Runner beat him 2 or 3 times, 14 lengths, but the rest of us was beating him 4 lengths. So I say, you take Gun Runner out of the picture, he could win a grade one. And we decided this year we were going to try to do it, and we finally got it.
Well, you mentioned earlier that you look at pedigree and confirmation when you go to the sales. You bought Discreet Lover at the Faison Tipton Mid-Atlantic 2-year-old and training sale for $10,000. He was already a buyback for $14,000 at OBS. What did you see in Discreet Lover that other people didn't see?
Well, I like the first foal from the dam. And He was the first fool from the dam, and I like Repent. I always was a Repent fan. And I like Repent, and I say, you know, first fool from the dam. They said he didn't get out. Everybody didn't like him, but he was smart. I walk in the store, and we looked at him before the sale, and we like, man, what the heck is going on? Sorry, I'm looking at light switches. Sparking. Yeah, so when I saw him in the sale, I told my wife, I said, if we could get this horse for less than 15,000, let's take it and take a chance. And we got him for 10. We brought him home, as I say. He didn't bet out where everything. He had a little bump on his shin, but we had him experiencing in the sale, and nothing wrong with it. And we just kept going with him. And we never really had to stop on him, never. As a two-year-old, he ran great. The first race he ran, he didn't know nothing. He got beaten about 8 or 10 lengths. The second race he ran, we just missed. We actually thought we were going to win that race. And the horse came out and hit him, and he stopped. And we claimed fall and everything. They didn't do nothing. And it was a blessing in disguise. We took him up to Saratoga. He ran up at Saratoga. He finished fifth, beaten, I think, 2¾ length to Duncan Moon and all of those horses. And we said, we know he can't lose at Pax. The next race, we bring him back. And he won. But at that time, Pax used to have double the purse. So as a second race, he ran for 45,000. I think in New York, I think the purse was 75,000. At Pax, the purse was 88 grand or 90 grand, something like that, and he won it. He won it by 8 lengths. And he's always been nice, easy horse to deal with. He trains good. You never have to ask him to do nothing. And we just kept going on with him. Every November or so, we stop with him, give him a couple months, and he's been rewarding us every year more and more and more.
That's great. Well, you know, everybody buys horses for the tracks that they race at. And when you didn't set out to buy a Jockey Club Gold Cup winner, you were probably just hoping that you could win some races with Discreet Lover, that he would be able to win himself out and you know, pay some bills for some of the other horses in your barn. But when did you think that maybe he was better than the $10,000 that you gave for him?
When we run in the Ohio Derby, actually the race at Pax, when he ran two turns, I don't know if that was his first or second race going two turns, but he was closing. And I say, man, this horse, he wants to go long. And then we took him to Ohio, and Jose Flores did a wonderful job with him, and he finished third. And we were tickled pink. We got 50 grand for going out to Ohio. They paid all our expenses and everything. And we're like, wow. You get 50 grand for a horse that you pay 10 grand for. And he's already, at that time, I think he made about 100 and something thousand. So we knew we had something special. We didn't think we had a grade one winner yet. Last year, I really thought, after he ran with Gunrunner, I thought this year I could win a grade one. I actually thought I could win the Whitney and the Woodward. Well, the Whitney, we got close. We got beaten 4½ lengths in the Whitney. And the Woodward, we kept him too close and he got beat. But I really thought we could have won the Whitney and the Woodward because his numbers started climbing real high. And we said, if you could get over 100, you could win. I mean, the buyer numbers, sometimes I think that's a crazy number because the guy gives you 115 and then he gives the horse 99. But the numbers was getting up there. I mean, the last 10 or 15 races, the Street Lover run, his lowest number I think is 85 when he run in the Woodward, but everything is 92, 94, 99, 98, 97, 98, 99. His numbers is always up there high. So the 103, he got 103 for the Jockey Club, and he got 103 for some other race. I think it was a Whitney.
Is there a way that he kind of telegraphs to you that he's ready to run a big race?
That's like a, every time that horse goes out there, he tries. So I'm always expecting the best from him. Every time he goes out, he tries. The one race he was upset with, it was the Woodward. When he came back from the Woodward, he was mad. I mean, that horse was, I never saw him act like that. Like, what were you guys trying to do with me? You know, put me that close. And, you know, I could, and he act real bad. He didn't, you know, like, wow, I want to do something else to prove to you guys that wasn't me. And I said, the next race we were trying is the Jockey Club. We knew we were going to the Jockey Club. We just put him in the Kelso and the race at Parks. We just nominated those races so that people think we're going to those races. But we knew we were heading to the Jockey Club.
So that was the main focus all along. And
right.
And you had that race on your radar for a while. Why the decision to try to keep him close up in the Woodward?
Because it was 14 horses. It was 14 horses, and if you've been to Saratoga, the track is not that wide. Belmont is wide, Aqueduct is wide. Saratoga is a real narrow track. Because when you walk, you have to walk them from the back to the front, and the track is not that wide. And I'm like, 14 horses, and you're going into the first turn real quick. I said, we were, I think, post position 7 or 8. I don't exactly what post. But I told Manny, I said, when that gate opened, we got to send him a little bit and just try to keep him out of all the traffic. And they bang him around, they push him around, and I'm like, whoops, that's not him. And down the backside, I see Manny scrubbing on him. I'm like, wow, if he's scrubbing on him and we still have four furlong to go, he's not going to run. And he didn't run that day at all. I know that was my fault.
Well, that's good of you to take the blame. One thing I've noticed in this conversation we've had so far is that Discreet Lover does not like to be banged around at all. He likes to run his own race.
If you push him around, he wouldn't try. Because when he run in the next race that he didn't run good, the Charleston Classic, the same thing happened. I told the jockey, I said, when the gate opens, send him out of there because it's a bull ring. Just send him out of there. And he got pushed around, and he like, that's it, I'm done.
Yeah, that's something.
And he didn't run a drop in that. I mean, he beat Diversify, but both of them didn't run.
he's beaten
then
him
I
twice.
Then I came back and I run in the race at Pimlico, the Pimlico Special, and we took him back a little bit, and he made his run. Then we came back and we run in the Met Mile, and they kept saying I'm crazy. This guy is nuts. And I finished fourth in the Met Mile. Then we went from the Met Mile to the what's the next race? The Suburban. Went to the Suburban. We finished third in the Suburban. Then we went to the Whitney, and we finished third in the Whitney. So he was running good races, you know, and the Whitney kept him 4.5 lengths.
Yeah.
The Woodward, they bet him. And he got beat.
Yeah.
So then they forgot about him again, and he's 45-1 the next race.
Yeah, he reads the tote board too.
I mean, I can understand, but I think Lutz bet his own horse. That's why his horse was 25-1 or whatever, 30-1 or 40, whatever it was. Because I'm saying, a sprinter who never been, when he been two turns, he get beat up. He's running for 2 other than, he's lower odds than me in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, and I couldn't understand that at all. Yeah. I said, this was a sprinter going, you know, 1.25 miles.
Yeah, so. Well, the first half of this show has flown by. We're with Uriah St. Louis, and we're going to take a short break. We'll come back with our special guest because we got a heck of a lot more to talk about. This is Jude Feld. See you in a minute.
On November 4th, let your stars shine their brightest under the Fasig Tipton November Sale Spotlight. Poised to attract the bids of the world's leading buyers, no other sale packs as much thrill and excitement into one single session. The November sale was stronger than ever in 2017 with record gains as sellers realized top prices for their prized fillies, broodmares, and weanlings. Nominate now the Fasig Tipton November Sale, November 4th in Lexington, Kentucky. Learn more at phasicnovember.com.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Rosso Maya, what a finish to the contest.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
Hello, this is Stuart Morris. I've spent the last 30 years of my life in the thoroughbred industry. I've been fortunate to be surrounded by great mentors and great clientele base and phenomenal horses as I've come up. I started out with my father at High Clear and was fortunate to raise Silver Bullet Day. I sold the likes of Captain Steve and Silver Bullet Day. 3 years ago, I started my own consignment and have been very fortunate to have a lot of success in a short amount of time due to the great clientele base I have and the good folks that send me really quality horses that are raised the right way and get into good hands for us. We hang our shingle at most every sale east of the Mississippi River, and we hope to see you somewhere to buy your next stake horse at Stuart Morris Consignment.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Control Group and Harlan Punch turn for home together. Zanotti is under pressure on the inside and is back running in third backside of the moon. Discreet Lover trying to mount a charge on the far outside with a furlong to run. It's still wide open here. Harlan Punch, Zanotti coming back. Discreet Lover on the far outside coming the best. Control Group is fourth. Backside of the moon. They're coming down to the line and it is Discreet Lover. Discreet Lover and Manny Franco win the Excelsior by 2.5 lengths over Zanotti. Then it was Harlan Punch and Backside of the Moon. The final time was 1 minute 50.45 seconds.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. This is Jude Feld with 2018 Jockey Club Gold Cup winning trainer Uriah St. Louis. And I want to remind everybody that if you missed any portion of this show, it will be archived on our website, horseracingradio.net, and is also available at Horse Racing Radio on iTunes. We just heard the call of the Excelsior at Aqueduct. That was April 7th, and it was Discreet Lover's second start of the year. Uriah, was that the stepping off point for this excellent season that he's had?
As I said, we always give him off in the December and January and so on. So we brought him back, I think, in March, I think, and we ran a race down at Laurel. And we got beaten. We finished third. But we know he wasn't tight enough to do anything. We just wanted to see where he's at. And he finished third in that race. Then we decided if we go to the Excelsior, and we went to that, hoping we could win it. And the gate opened. And he stumbled. When he stumbled, I'm like, oh, boy. I hope Manny has a second thing. And he actually, maybe the best thing ever happened to him. Because when it happened, he had to take him back and just relax. And he made one run and he won it. I think we ran him back too close back in the Charleston Classic. Because it was like 14 or 15 days later was the Charleston Classic. And we went down to the Charleston Classic. And as I said, we tried to keep him close there, and he didn't run good. But then after that, we had a month in between each race, and that's, I think that was really what makes him better. Because now instead of having to run every 3 weeks or 2 weeks, you know what you're pointing for.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that I thought was interesting, too, as we've been talking here, is that you appreciate when a horse runs third or fourth, and maybe that comes from the fact that you're paying your own bills and getting those checks that those horses make. They go a long way. When you run in a big race and you finish third or fourth, you're still making a lot of money. And that's something that I think, you know, the emphasis in today is always on winning, winning, winning. The minute a horse loses a race, everybody jumps ship and finds another horse that's on a streak. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, and the kind of races he's running in, like the Met Mile, I think we got $70,000 for finishing fourth. The Suburban, we get, I think, $70,000 or $80,000 for finishing third. The Ponies Ross race this year that horse didn't make no money was the Woodward. Even the Charleston Classic, they gave us, I think, $18,000 or $20,000 just for showing up. So most horses in this country don't own about, what, $20,000, $30,000 a race. And he's making $70,000, $80,000 a race for finishing fourth and third. I mean, back in the, when Fogo and all those horses run, they win so many races, just the pot was $100,000. Pot was $100,000. The winner gets $60,000. And them horses run their butt off. I mean, I watched Fogo. He carry 139 pounds. Wild horses, grade one horses carrying 116 pounds. And when I got into this, I say, you know something? If they could make checks, they could pay bills. And because you have a lot of horses don't get a check and you can't pay your bills. You still have to pay your bills. You still have to take care of everything. So if the horse, I don't mind if you finish third or fourth, so long as you help supporting the band. And in this case, he takes care of his own stuff. But the rest of them I have, you could finish second, you could finish third. At the end of the year, it adds up to a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that, I mean, absolutely. And these races that you're running in, I mean, they carry big pots everywhere you go. The Suburban, let's talk about that for a minute. That was a race I'm sure your son liked. That was like his best speed figure of the year. Talk about that race a little bit.
The Suburban, when we got him there to that race, it was a mile and a quarter. I think that was the first time. No, he ran a mile and a quarter the year before in the Excelsior, which they turned into a mile and eight the next year. So, but it was going a mile and a quarter, and it's only one turn. So we told Manny, take him back, make one run, and see where he's at. Yeah. So see where he's at, and he started running. Well, Diversify is all speed, and Diversify was gone. I think Liberty Liberal finished second. No, there wasn't Liberty.
Who
finished
the Lieutenant. The Lieutenant was second.
The Lieutenant, right. We were moving up the rail, and I said, well, at least we could get second. And that horse kept banging into us. And I'm like, okay, so we finished third. I was happy for that because he came out good and he did everything good. And I said, the next race we're going to point for is the Whitney. And the Whitney, that was a race to remember. We all were in the paddock. It was like 5 minutes to post. And they got a weather report up at Saratoga that it's going to be lightning and thunder and all kind of stuff. So everybody had to stop and just stay in the paddock. And we stayed in the paddock for, I think, 45 minutes. And after we got out, I ran a horse earlier, like the race before, the track was dry. And then that race was 45 minutes we had to wait, and we waited the 45 minutes, and it poured, and it poured, and the track turned real sloppy. I said, the guy with Mind Your Biscuit said he was going to go out and take it to Diversified. So we were expecting that. We said, he's going to take it. Well, he didn't take it to Diversified. Diversified went out. Mind Your Biscuit was sitting second, and we had to come from way back. But we come flying, and Mind Your Biscuit came out a little bit on us. I don't think he really interfered with us, but he intimidated us. And we finished third. And so the Whitney was one to remember.
Yeah, it certainly was. I was there that day, and the skies just opened up. There was a, I believe, 47-minute delay or something. It was crazy.
Right, it was ridiculous. And they don't have no... At Saratoga, the paddock is crazy, and they got this little shed where you could really saddle horses. When you start putting 7 or 6 horses underneath that little shed and they're feeling good, it was dangerous because horses would, I mean, Diversified had to go out in the rain quite a few times. We had to go out in the rain quite a few times because nobody wanted to stay underneath there and get kicked. The horses were getting too close to each other.
Right.
So it was great experience for him. I mean, if you run, most of his races he ran was Belmont Stakes Day. He ran in Pimlico on Preakness Day twice. So he's been where big crowds is, so he ain't running about a big crowd on him. That's why if I go to the Breeders' Cup, I ain't scared because he's been where 100,000 people quite a few times.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he certainly got the experience on big race day. And that race, I thought he was very game in that performance. He tried to get by Mind Your Biscuits, but... Mind Your Biscuits had a little bit left in the tank, and he just couldn't get by him. But it was a very good finish at the end for your horse, and I thought that was an excellent race all the way around. You know, horses, people sometimes forget about their ages, but there's a lot of horses that develop when they turn 5 years old. Everybody talks about the difference between a 2 and a 3 and a 3 and a 4, but sometimes when horses turn 5, they really start to blossom, and hopefully Discreet Lover is one of those horses.
This is the least among the races he run in any given year, I think. There's a 2-year-old I think he ran 7 or 8 times. And his 3-year-old, he ran a little more. 4-year-old, he ran 14 times. And I think this will be his 10th race coming up. And he's relishing it because he runs once a month. If we want to breeze him 2-3 times in a month, we do. And he's just relaxed. He just enjoy himself. As I say, he's easy to train. He don't miss a meal. If he miss a meal, we know something is wrong. He don't miss a meal. And he just have a good time. I mean, he's really, really easy to go along with. Only thing he do, he bites. He likes to bite. Uh-huh. But, you know, we everybody got a custom around him, so we know what he does, if I'm putting bandages on or anything, because nobody has put the bandage but me. I don't let nobody mess with his legs. So, but... I take him, and he might nibble at me, but I never see him try to kick nobody. I mean, he could probably kick somebody, but he never tried to kick nobody. He never tried to savage nobody. You walk him around the shed room, he's a pussycat. The horses don't bother him. Horse behind him could be screaming and yelling because of other people in the barn. He don't. Nothing bothered him. They could kick in the wall, jumping up, and care. Don't bother him. They run around the shed room. Don't bother him. Which makes, I think that's where you get some good horses from. I don't say all good horses going to be like that because I see crazy horses as good horses, you know. So, but he is easy to deal with. He's never hard on himself. When he's training him in the morning time, somebody is bruising, he's just galloping, he let the horse go by. He don't even worry, well, I've got to chase him. If he's bruising in the morning and a horse bruising, he let the horse beat him. I'm like, You let the ref beat you. He don't care. You know, it's the morning time. And it looked like he knows. It's like, it's morning time. So, okay, so he wants to go out there and run work 46 in the morning. All right, so I work 47 and 4. He ain't care about that. You know, in the evening time, he puts on a race face. And you could tell him, he gets to a certain position in the stall, and he stands. You know he's getting ready to run. Every time he gets in a certain position in the store, and he just stands there, and he's like, okay. You could see the transformation. He goes from night to day, just like that.
Yeah. It's his game face. He's got his game face on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's cool when horses do that. It's intelligence, isn't it, that really makes a good horse? I mean, I think that's the key right there.
Well, I always said that. I had a horse back in, like, 94. Maybe had more ability. I always tell people the horse probably had more ability than Discreet Lover. But you couldn't do nothing really easy. His name was Blue Maduro. You couldn't. He ran third in the Freddie Uco Test here. At that time, it was a great freak. And he could have probably been a real, real nice horse because he ran 100 bio when he was a 3-year-old, but he was mental. You get him on the racetrack, and he's galloping, and a horse run inside him, start breathing, and he takes off after the horse. And the guy's trying to pull him up. We used draw rings. We used different kind of bridles. They don't matter. When a horse breaks off anywhere close to him, he's gone. And that's the difference between Discreet Lover and a few of them that I had. That, you know, he's real mellow, smart, don't do nothing stupid, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a huge difference. And certainly it's great to see that a horse does that, takes care of themselves and knows what's going on, is really aware. Yeah, we would be remiss if we didn't say a few words about Jose Flores, who unfortunately passed away after an accident, but he was the regular rider for Discreet Lover for a long, long time.
Yeah, he used to ride most of my barn because what Jose is the type, he's from the old school. Jose worked on at Penn National, bad horses, good horses, everything, and Jose will come and tell me, listen, Uriah, I don't want riding this one. This one is not feeling as great as that one. I said, okay, Jose. And Jose was down to earth. He goes to dinner with us. He, you know, after the races, we flew him out to Ohio to ride in Ohio Derby, you know. And if you do something wrong, I tell him, I say, Jose, you should have done this and done that. Okay, Uriah. I mean, you could never get mad with Jose Flores. Jose Flores was one of the guys. He's mellow. He's like Discreet Lover. And they both get along real good. I mean, Jose, the first race we ran at this year in Maryland, after the race done run, Jose said, we're going to have a nice time with this one this year. He said, came back out of that race real good. And the brakes was well for him. And 4 days or 3 days later, he was dead. And it hurt because we were watching it on our TV in the tack room. We were watching the race, and the next race he was riding a horse for me, a cheap horse he was going to ride for me. And we saw the horse go down, and when we went up front, one or two jockeys came back and said, it didn't look good, Uriah. And when we went to the hospital, we knew it wasn't no good. Mm. So, I mean, I will always have Jose in a spot in my heart. Discreet Lover, I went in before Jose passed away, I went in, I hold his hand and I talked to him and I told him, I say, Discreet Lover will all be thinking about you. And please think about him. I think Jose Flores is on Discreet Lover every time he's running with Manny.
I noticed that too. You're very loyal with your riders. You stick with one rider. You're not a fair weather friend when it comes to jockeys.
Well, I always think, you know, sometimes they can make mistakes, and you could go along with it. And I always try to, you could come to Pass and ask anybody. I try to help all the younger jockeys, the Bug Boys, and then give them a chance, let them, you know, because somebody give me a chance. And I always said, if the person stick with you long enough and you guys get along, the horses, I think the horses could feel it. Because horses, is like human beings. I mean, some of them is rambunctious, some of them is nice, some of them is arrogant, and the same thing with human beings. And a lot of horses could feel tension when you have tension. I tell jockeys, if you're scared of the horse, he's not going to run for you. Jose Flores, horses run for him because, one, he was a good gate jockey. Two, he is very patient with them. And three, nothing bothers Jose. Nothing. Jose could get break bad. His foot could come out of the stirrup, and he'd come back. I say, what were you doing? He say, I lost my stirrup. Like, okay. I mean, I'd be mad, and he wasn't mad. So that guy was unbelievable. You will never get another Jose Flores. Manny Franklin is a nice, nice jockey, you know, and he always tries for me. Thank God for that. Jose used to do the same. And that's why I don't switch jockeys around. If you just try, every horse ain't going to be great. Every horse ain't going to be good. And you cannot win every race. You're running so much races you could win. So long as you come back in one piece, I'm happy.
Yeah, that's good. That's great. Well, you know, Saturday was such a great day for your family and you know, for you too. I mean, it was just amazing. But one of the things that touched me was your daughter's response after the victory by Discreet Lover.
That's my father. He's my father. I'm his daughter. I'm just so proud. I'm so, so proud of this horse. He tries so hard all the time. He deserves it. He deserves this. My father deserves this. He works so hard. This is his horse. He owns it. He trades it. It's just amazing.
That's great, huh?
Yeah, she was, you know, because she sees the stuff I went through. She see I work for people, help people out, do everything. She knows what I been through. It's not the easiest game. In this game and in any other business, 50% of the people are going to like you and 50% of the people are going to hate you. They don't even know you, and they're going to hate you. People write stuff about me, they never ever met me. They never been in my barn. And they write bad stuff, and you're like, come in my barn, see my horses, see how I take care of my business, and then you could talk. But it have people, this is how the world is, you know, it have people, and she see all the bad comments and things. See, I'm older, so I don't really mess with the internet and stuff. She and my son and my wife and them mess with the internet. I kind of like old school. I don't want to see all that foolishness. I don't care. And so it bothers her when she hear people making comments and they don't know what they're doing or what they're saying, you know. So it gets there, and she was so glad to see that he did great, because a lot of people, oh, that guy is crazy. He's a nut. Why is he running the horse over his head? If I was with him over his head, he wouldn't be picking up checks, you know?
That's right.
And they talk how bad he is. That horse runs 44 times. All in modern era, you see any horse run 44 times and at the top of their game. Most of these horses, Bob Buffett, for example, had that horse run 6 times. He won the Triple Crown. You will see him again. Most of them run 6 to 10 times and not taken from them. Maybe the horse had a problem or something. But they don't run 44 times. I don't know much trainers who have a good horse that ran 44 times in the career. Most of these people is all about money. As soon as they get 10, 12 races and one great one, they're gone. They're gone. So it's not helping the sport. You need horses to stay a little longer, like Fargo. Even Secretary Seattle Slew, they all stayed around a couple of years. Now you run in the Triple Crown, you finish, that's it. They're retired. So I like the sport, and I want to see the sport go along, and I want to see the young people and them make it in this sport. So if I could run them, I mean, I'm getting pressure to get rid of him now, so I run him maybe one more time and then retire him.
Yeah, well, he's had a career. He's raced 4 seasons now, 2-year-old, 3-year-old, mm-hmm. 4-year-old, 5-year-old. He's certainly done his work. He's achieved the grade 1 status, and You know, I mean, he made $1.3 million. That's quite a story for a horse that was a buyback at $14,000, and then you purchased him at $10,000. Just an amazing outcome, and a lot of, obviously a lot of hard work and thought go into where you run this horse, and that's why he's been so successful.
Yeah, we just take one day at a time. You know, every time they say he don't have a chance or he's not good enough, I say, you got to go out there and prove yourself. They say he's not good enough, go out and prove yourself. You could show them, and he goes out and he does it. And he comes back, and he don't miss a meal, he don't miss nothing. We just say, one day at a time.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that you actually do participate in some activities away from the racetrack. What are some of the things that you enjoy to do when you're not working the other 23 hours a day?
Well, like this summer, my daughter, myself, and my wife, my son didn't want to go. We went to the Phillies game. We go to the Phillies game, which is baseball. And we went to a Philly game. Last year we went to the Eagles game. We went to the Eagles played the Atlanta Falcons. And I'm a Yankee fan, so sometimes I go, if we get a chance, my daughter will drive us up and we watch a Yankee baseball game. You know, and that's what we like to do. I wanted to go to the tennis match this year with Serena Williams, but I didn't have a chance. You know, and we do stuff like that. We go out to dinner. We go to the movies. And you try to family stuff. Most of the stuff is based around horse racing anyway. So when we go up to Saratoga, we make a little vacation out here for 4 or 5 days. You know, when we go up to Saratoga, you know, we go on a Minnehaha and go up to Lake George and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's cool. Is Saratoga your favorite racetrack? What's your favorite racetrack?
Saratoga. I think every man who is involved in horse racing should just make a trip to Saratoga and see the atmosphere. Just go to Saratoga one day in your life and you will see the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. It's like a bucket list destination for a lot of people. It's beautiful racing and just a great place to be during the summer. There's no question about it.
It's so great. Every year we try to get one horse to take to Saratoga. For the last 5 years, we took at least one horse to Saratoga. It's so different. I've been to a lot of racetracks, but that one is so, so different. You get to Saratoga, you might never want to come back to another racetrack.
Yeah, I think you might be right. That is kind of the case. Everybody's always sad when they have to go home after the meet's over with. It's one of those places that you really enjoy. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to visit with us. It's been a fantastic hour, and you were a great guest, and we really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll catch up with you again soon. Thanks to Uriah St. Louis for taking the time to hang with us, and a special thank you to producer Lee Della Pina. You've been listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. This is Jude Feld from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios. Good night, everybody, and best of luck as we move down the road to the Breeders' Cup.